Yes, you finally reached it. Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Today, Monday, July 24th. And I'm your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norris. With me in the studio today, a special guest, Nutcracker Nick Whitehead. Nick here is queuing up a tape, and he'll be with us shortly. He's an expert in different areas. Expert isn't right, perhaps the word. He's an artist. He's a playwright. He has written numerous plays. One of my favorites, Home Sweet Homeless, which will be premiering on radio, at least a somewhat radio-ish version of it, next Friday, when he will be, if not emceeing it, certainly describing it and giving us a commentary to go with it. We'll have an hour-long show, an hour-long presentation of Home Sweet Homeless, followed by Nick's own analysis and interviews with him, but we have him here in the studio today as well. He's not only a playwright, he's a co-founder of the organization SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, a local group that began back in 1990 to compile reports of police misconduct, instruct people on how to witness police activity on the street, sort of a precursor to Cop Watch, which right now is largely inactive, but was operating last year and has been operating in our community on and off for the last few years, and in Berkeley is a growing and going concern. Cop Watch is a group that ensures that the police stay honest and instructs citizens on how to legally and appropriately observe police contacts on the street, something that I think all of us should be doing. Other things we're going to be doing today, and we got a lot of stuff on the agenda here, though not as many interviews as on Friday. I'm going to have an update from Crossroads' Chris Brazda, who has been keeping his eye on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the Downtown Management Corporation, and the DA's office, all three. And hopefully he's going to call in, or will call him, or something will happen around that line to get some updates on these subjects, which affect the rights of people on the streets and poor people and homeless people, which is, of course, the theme of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. What else we got? Well, we've got a report from San Francisco. We'll have a report from Berkeley. We'll have a report from Santa Cruz on what CCH is doing around Community House, which is their milk cow plan to put in transitional housing outside the in the middle of the campground. It may result in the destruction of the campground or its relocation. We're not sure what's going to be happening around that. And I'll be giving you the latest rumors around that situation. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of hard information. I'm recovering from a burning in the sun this weekend, as well as a... Thank you, Nick. As well as a bizarre cold cum allergy, which is continuing to give an aura at my throat at night. So forgive me if I'm not as articulate as I might be. But why don't we swing into the first segment of the show and give me a chance to shut up. I'm going to introduce our co-host here, or our co-guest, or anyway, the other guy in the studio, Nutcracker Nick Whitehead. Nick, wander on up to the mic and say hi. And got to kiss the mic here in order to be heard.
Good morning. This is the first time I've been on your station. I don't know how many people are listening, but I assume it's the more conscious, perhaps some of the more radical element of the community. I'm happy about that, for sure. I was at the protest at the town clock on Friday. There was a gathering of about 60, maybe more, people. Lots of folks from prominent organizations, ACLU, Wilkes, and university personnel, NOW, representatives of the Hispanic community, and a few Afro-Americans as well, and made a little tape recording, which all of the speakers at the event, and an announcement about an upcoming meeting on the 30th at Loudoun Nelson at 6 o'clock on the subject of affirmative action. So we're going to play this tape. There may be a little technical hitch here. I'm not familiar with this equipment. So we'll do our best.
Yeah, Nick is a long-time supporter of human rights causes here in Santa Cruz. And the particular cause that he was supporting on this day, and the particular rally that he was covering at the town clock, a traditional rallying place in Santa Cruz, concerned affirmative action and the attempt of a presidential candidate, a Republican presidential candidate, Governor Wilson, also a regent at the University of California Board of Regents, to end that program in order to drum up support for his campaign. Do you want to give us a little background on the issue before we start? It's an important issue, I think, in a broader way, but it also affects, it's relevant to us here concerned with poverty rights, because affirmative action affects people who are in the main poor, although some criticism has been leveled against affirmative action because they feel that it's simply a race-based rather than income-based. So what's your analysis of all this, Nick?
Well, the biggest group to be widely affected and devastated by basically a refusal to admit proportionately into the UC system, educational system, the biggest group are women. That's often ignored or forgotten. Of course, it affects the usual traditional groups that need affirmative action, ethnic population primarily. So the hardest hit would be an ethnic female. And the proposal by the university is to replace the system, to bias the system on economic grounds, according to your economic income class. And they say that's going to be more fair. And, you know, you could well present an argument that would be a better basis, except it doesn't deal with the historical unfairnesses. Those are the two counter arguments there.
Well, that sounds good. Particularly of interest, local protests on human rights issues, and this is a human rights issue, are of interest to me because I've been a little bit dismayed at the kind of fall off in protest in the last year. Maybe you want to introduce this tape, Nick, and kind of describe.
I just want to know how to play it.
So as Nick is just going, we're going to segue right into it by pushing this button right here on our control panel. I wish you could see it. It's quite a button.
Wow, what a button.
It's a button. I got my finger on the button. I'm about to play the machine. So here comes a little something for you to listen to.
Whitehead down at the town clock Friday afternoon affirmative action demonstration. I'm with underground subversive radio station KFUK.
The first speaker is Wendy Chaptis of UCSC Graduate Student Employees.
I was at the UC Regents meeting in San Francisco, and it was a horror. If this is not illegal in the state of California, we must change the constitution of our state.
Yes.
If a board appointed by the governor and donating tens of thousands of dollars to his political campaign is allowed to vote prior to the November election on the issue that he has made the centerpiece of his campaign, then we are in big trouble. We need to sue the shit out of the UC Regents on this one.
Profanity.
It seems to me that if all of the chancellors of all of the UCs all disagreed with this policy, it would behoove them to be parties to that suit. I really urge any of you who are university involved to contact the chancellor's office and find out what they are planning on doing. And I thank you all for being out here, because I feel like this is the first shot to what's going to be a very long and very difficult struggle. And it made a lot of difference to me yesterday to be with 1,000 other people who were upset. So please come out to the next round of organizing and bring a couple of people.
she really said it. She was at the meeting of the region when the fateful decision was made.
Calling up a student from UC now?
Calling up a student from UC.
Okay. My name is Ellie Ilano. I've been a part of the Affirmative Action Program at UC Santa Cruz for 4 years, and I successfully graduated this past June. And 4 years ago, I began sitting on a statewide University of California Council on Affirmative Action. And at my very first meeting, there were some people in that group who brought up this weird idea that there were people in this state who wanted to end affirmative action. And we all looked at this one person and said, yeah, whatever, you know, that's not a real possibility. There's too much support in the state for this program. And standing here 4 years later, I'm still in shock. I can't believe that you know, this has happened. So if you ever hear like someone say something that you think is totally wild and outrageous, it might become a reality because I'm standing here and I'm realizing that the regions have, it's a reality that they have ended the affirmative action program. I'm an employee right now of the affirmative action program. I tutor affirmative action students, and I want you all to know, in case there's any question in your mind, they are as qualified, if not more qualified, for the university than students not in the program. And if there's anything that I can give to you when you go away from here, I want you to know that these students, they meet all the academic requirements, even though they have to overdo hardships just to meet those eligibility requirements. They do meet those eligibility requirements. They are eligible for the university, and they deserve to be there. I don't know personally what we can do about this, but if people keep together, I know that we can overcome things like this. So remember, affirmative action students are there as deservingly, if not more deservingly, than anybody else. So please support them as they continue to struggle and make it through the university.
And here's a remarkable statement by Professor David Sweet of the university.
The University of California might become the kind of an institution that apparently Pete Wilson and the regents, the 14 regents who made that shameful vote yesterday, wants it to become is repugnant to me. I want no part of it. I'm going to do nothing to cooperate with it and everything I can think of to sabotage it. And I hope that you will join me in doing that.
Ah, viva la resistance. Mr. David. And here we go with Jim Cosner of Refuse and Resist.
About affirmative action. And they were trying to tell me that now white, black, brown, red, and yellow people, women and men, have achieved equality in America.
Bullshit!
How can you even think with any kind of objective reality looking right here in the community and across the state, throughout the nation, that black and white, brown, women, men, everyone is equal? Affirmative action is something like a little piece of crumb, like a slice of bread that the government gave the minorities as a result of the uprising in the 60s. And now they're saying that it's time to take it back. And they're trying to divide us amongst race. They're trying to divide us amongst language. They're trying to divide us and keep us down. We cannot remain silent any longer. That if anybody here has been silent, raise your voice and check out how affirmative action relates to the increasing police state. Check out how affirmative action relates to Mumia Abu-Jamal being killed. Check out how affirmative action relates to two-thirds of the black population living in inner city ghettos. Check out how there's over 65,000 Latinos behind bars in California alone. Over 50,000 black people behind bars in California alone. We have to do everything we possibly can do to unite as many people as possible around all lines. We can come together more, communicate more, talk with each other more, and come to an understanding about how not only are we going to resolve affirmative action problems, but resolve all problems throughout this country, in this community.
Ray from the desk at the Loudoun Nelson. He was here. He's gone. He was in the front line talking to the people in cars with a placard pointing on his bike.
Can they just say no? The president of the university, Councilman Duncan Pocasimani, say at the Regents meeting yesterday that they totally don't agree with abolishing affirmative action and they really don't want the Regents to take this vote. But if the Regents take this vote, they will implement the policy. And I think we need to be challenging the amendment, just like we are in 187. But call up the Chancellor's office and ask. And maybe call up the SAAEOP office and ask if there's some assistance that they need.
Thinking about how to tackle pressuring the university. If we're going to do that, we need to keep in mind that there's hardly anybody in the University of California who agrees with the Regents' decision. The chancellors don't, the faculty doesn't, the students who speak up don't. Who knows if there are some who don't speak up or closet supporters. But generally speaking, the whole university is opposed to this, which creates a political situation with no precedent, as Wendy pointed out. These guys do not represent anybody except the Bohemian Grove gang, the Millionaire Club, and Pete Wilson. Nobody is on their side. This is a rare opportunity. We've got to make it costly to them.
How can we make it costly?
Well, I think starting by letting the Chancellor know that, of course, the community feels the same way he does about this subject, and that it will back him up in anything he can find the strength to do. It's not easy to be a president or chancellor who says to the Regents of the University of California, you can lose your job. It's a hard situation for them. They need support, I suppose, is the way to think about that at this moment. But that's not enough, because they're not going to lead the charge. The shit has to hit the fan this fall. That's what it is.
Wow, straight from the professor.
Nothing but affirmative action in your class. Go to work. Don't talk about nothing but it. Or don't go to work. And don't go to class. No more business as usual. We're going to jerk off and kiss in a little puddle. But unless you do, fucking do, it ain't going to happen. Is that right? Yeah.
Well, I saw the professor nodding his head there as the revolutionary spoke. The woman in black with the boots, I think she rides a motorbike. The children here. Can I ask one of the children what affirmative action means to you? What are all these big people doing here today? Got any idea? Do they know what it means?
Yes, I'm only 3 and a half. I don't know yet.
Wow, her mom's speaking up for her. Wow. How do you know you're 3?
Because I'm not always 3.
But how can you be sure? Oh, and are you happy with what you're learning about the world? You learn a little every day, huh? Okay. Dylan?
Yeah.
Oh. There you go. Dylan the poet is up and at it again.
If you want to call the Chancellor, 459-2058, I'm on the spot. University of California, Santa Cruz.
Now go. That telephone number is 459-2058. 2058. The prefix for 459.
an announcement about the meeting that people can attend.
There will be a meeting on Sunday, July 30th, 6 p.m. at Loudoun Nelson, which is being called by Californians for Justice, which is a pro-affirmative action group. Everybody is invited. It is an organizing meeting for Santa Cruz and Monterey counties. So come on out and let's work together for affirmative action.
That's terrific. This is Charlie. Hi. All you have to do is look around you if you need to reassess affirmative action and look at every color and skin and the beauty of what university, college, and education. And
if it hadn't been for affirmative action, we would not see the beauty, the reassuredness, the assessment.
I'm sorry, I'm going to read with the poetry of your motion.
Motion adopted. Let's get out of here and get this to the radio station right away.
And that was reporter Nutcracker Nick Whitehead at the town clock last Friday around 6 at the rally opposing the University of California Regents' recent decision to abandon affirmative action, I think as of 1997, something like that.
Yeah, correct.
Well, I think it may be appropriate here to play devil's advocate for a moment, or possibly just as sort of a naive questioner, and encourage folks to give a call if they have a view on the basic issue. And the basic issue, although it's being framed by politicians who have their own motives and their own reasons for doing this, the basic issue is, should affirmative action, that is to say programs that you see programs that concern themselves with more than simply grade levels, but also take into consideration other factors, other than talent, let's say past discrimination against that kind of a group, should there be ethnic programs, affirmative action programs, or does it better suit in resolving and rectifying injustice in our country to have programs that are income-oriented, that is to say, where poor people gain the benefit rather than those, let's say, who are black or brown who have previously been excluded? Am I framing this properly, Nick? What do you think?
Yeah, that you're doing it right. The proposal is to benefit people on their being a minority ethnic, minority economic group, replacing the ethnic consideration or the gender bias. And this is all very well, except that the university had specific categories before. The university was obliged to really go out and recruit people from the different social groupings. Will they still be obliged to do that when the new process comes into effect? I want to note that the chancellors of many of the campuses, I think the majority of the campuses, the faculty, and the student groupings have all combined and made clear statements that they do not look forward to this new system. Over the weekend, former Congressman Panetta, who's now a big noise in Washington, very close to the president, said that the University of California would be risking its contracts, federal contracts, because it isn't just academic routing that loses affirmative action. It's also the choice of contractors for various services and projects within the university system.
Yeah, this also, of course, relevant on a much broader basis because there's a statewide initiative that may soon reach the ballot to essentially destroy affirmative action, any kind of so-called preferential hiring that will be in the November ballot, probably. Again, we're straying a bit from my area of interest, which is that is to say poor people here in Santa Cruz. I mean, certainly an argument could be made that if the university is now concerning itself with letting in more poor people rather than simply letting in quotas or numbers of people who are ethnic, that is say, recruiting people on the basis of past discrimination to rectify that, when there has been and still is discrimination against ethnic minorities, nonetheless, that those in poorer income categories will benefit. And what's your answer to that argument, Nick?
Well, the answer to that is that we're supposed to have evolved to a point where everybody can play on the level playing field. So you have to ask yourself, well, is it a level playing field? And the answer, I can't go any further in presenting that argument, because I've heard enough from teachers and former students of inner city schools and of rural schools, and they frequently say that the level of education they got was in no way comparable to that which obtains in a good middle-class school. So that's where the energy needs to go. If the regents are going to have this new system, they should not have introduced it until they had ensured that quality education was available throughout all the high school systems in the state. As regards library resources and well-trained teachers in particular.
Thanks, Nick. We also have a caller that's just called in. We're going to put her on, who has her own response to that.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And for those of you who are waiting, as soon as this caller hangs up, you should give a call to 427-3772 or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Go ahead.
Thank you. You were suggesting when you asked Nicholas that last question that the issue of affirmative action and which students get a college education strays away from the issue of poverty. And I wanted to add a few cents worth of differing with that opinion. My daughter is about to graduate, well, she's graduating next May, as an undergraduate because of affirmative action. She's a mulatto child. She was raised basically on AFDC when her father abandoned us, to put it nicely. And she wouldn't have even gotten in if she had to have the middle class credentials that most college students have to get. And she works real hard. She probably works twice as hard as most students. She has to have three jobs to afford it on top of the grants that being an affirmative action student have enabled her to get. And now I'm just back from a trip to Oakland where I discovered that one of the regent's strategies is to pit the increases that the UC system needs from the state with their little Mr. Wilson on their board against the cuts that are proposed for AFDC. I mean, blatantly and publicly playing those two needs against each other. So, I mean, I could probably go along with a system that's going to kill me if somehow my children are going to get a full education, but I'm certainly not going to go along with it while they're trying to kill my children at the same time. So I don't know if people are going to get the point I'm making here, but it's one and the same issue. And whether or not other people who are struggling to hang on to what I think is everyone's legacy in America, the wealthiest country in many ways in the world, depends on whether we see these issues connecting. You know, I appreciate, Nick, your tape of people. I was aware through a woman, a great woman, undergraduate student at UCSC here, Karen Brown, that I met 4 years ago, who was showing me those documents, legal documents, that were dismantling the affirmative action system up at UCSC and around the state then. You know?
Really?
These people that sit on the region's boards are business interests, and they don't know the first thing about running a college. And I don't know what it is they're doing it for. I mean, obviously, Connolly's working for Wilson, helping him get elected, helping set the issues for this nation, not just the UC system, not just California, but for the United States of America, to try to tilt the next presidential campaign in the direction of racism and bigotry. That's the issue we're talking about here. Are we going to come up with a rhetoric that lets racists talk on in their racist ways and get away with trampling over everything that's been accomplished in the last 20 years and perhaps everything that's been accomplished since the American Revolution. So I don't want to see these issues separated out, not just because it hurts me personally, but because that's the biggest mistake we can make if we want people to come up in America with the opportunity for an education.
Well, now, as the devil's advocate, let's say that I've heard it said that initially you wanted to have a colorblind standard that would allow everyone an equal opportunity based simply upon their merit. This was the cry of the civil rights demonstrators of the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, maybe even the 90s. And now the concern is that individuals, because they are minorities, such where a minority also includes the word women, it can have a fairly lush economic background and then get preferential treatment based simply upon their status as a member of those groups, to the detriment of, let's say, lower income people who might take those places. Actually, it's not usually phrased that way. It's to the detriment of so-called better qualified. But I'm making the argument in terms of lower income people. And what would your response, and Nick, what would your response be to that?
My feeling is that what we're saying is the university system and its big business mentality has set up a flawed system to implement the rules that require affirmative action. And so now their bosses have gone in and instead of correcting the flaws and creating real affirmative action, they've flushed the whole thing down the toilet. You know, I think that the people who talk about, well, I didn't get in, so it must not be fair because that guy didn't get as good grades as me, aside from the obvious selfishness of that kind of position, aren't understanding what affirmative action means. Affirmative action is not a quota system. It is not a competitive polarity. It is not what we're used to in typical corporate American mentality. It's looking at the picture in a new way. You know, I mean, UCSC does poorly for the size of its institution and the amount of money they have to play with. They do a poor job at even letting people in minority and low-income communities know what they have to offer. They have one of the most beautiful campuses in the world, probably four or five of the most beautiful campuses in the world, but I know of one. And who knows about it? You know, the kids in high school right now, I have a son who just got out of high school. They're not even informed about what their potential legacy could have been in this state, you know? And Berkeley's turning down people who get accepted at Stanford and Harvard, you know?
But let's get back to this question, though, of why...
It's not real affirmative action. Instead of fixing it, they're dumping it. And that's why I'm asserting that...
Well, how should they fix it?
Racism is the driving mindset.
How should they fix it?
Well, the whole idea of affirmative action isn't to compare one little head or set of papers about someone to another. It's to create a broader frame and to give everyone an equal chance to apply for the college. But they don't do that. They go out just like sports recruiters and they pick the communities where they want people to know about it, you know. They pick what high schools they want to go to and get their token number of people of color, you know. That's not affirmative action.
Well, what should they do?
You know, what I just said, they should let everybody in the state who might ever want to go to college, not just select corridors of high school students, know about what the college has to offer. But more important, they ought to stop paying themselves like pigs that are trying to get fattened up and put the resources into the business of educating young people.
But there should be preferential treatment of people from ethnic minorities.
I'm saying preferences and affirmative action have nothing in common.
Oh, then there shouldn't be preferential treatment for minorities or
ethnic groups. You could fix affirmative action by taking out the quotas and the preferences. You don't have to do this point system the way they do it to do affirmative action. But because it's a subtle concept, it's hard for people who haven't been thinking about it for a while to understand what affirmative action really means.
It's hard for me. I'm not clear what you're proposing. Are you, Nick?
Not really.
No, neither of us are clear here.
Well,
maybe you can explain it again.
Well, first of all, in terms of the politics of the last few days, I'm proposing that the whole idea of bringing affirmative action up as if it were an issue of concern to the Regents is false and a political maneuver by the wannabe president who doesn't even know how to govern his state, but now he wants to be president.
We don't dispute that, but we want you to propose as an alternative that you feel would be a fair response to this, or a better response.
Oh, well, a better response would have to go back a few years. What I'm saying is, if every child that goes through the public school system or any school in California knew about what those schools, including the UC system, which gets state and government resources, have to offer.
So if there were, say,
they had the supports in place in their high schools instead of getting stripped of resources every year, they would all be equally looking around for what is in the interest of the future as they imagine it.
Aye, Linda. I think that's the whole thing. Bring them up from the base. Make it really fair.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need... I went up there and applied for a job in the department of the guy that recruits who they're going to fill their quotas with, and it is clearly a quota system to me, and I agree that quotas are an illegal approach, but it is not affirmative action.
Well, so in other words, your solution is going to be to better outreach in the high schools and some sort of support at a high school level for high schools throughout the state, if you'd be more specific?
High school students who have any interest in going to college knew what colleges have to offer. All of them. Not the ones that this counseling team in your high school or the visiting recruiter picks out.
You're repeating yourself. I mean, I understand what you've said. I'm trying to summarize it. You are saying then that better outreach to the high schools is the answer to the problem?
No, but it is certainly a piece of the answer.
We heard on the tape, Linda, remember we heard Ily Iliano,
yeah,
a student leader from the university, and he actually works in the affirmative action program,
mm-hmm,
up there tutoring people so that they can understand what they're learning and do as well as anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And are 1,000 Ily Ilianos not working on the campus at that late stage, but working in the last 3 years in particular, mm-hmm, of high school, so people get ready for a university entrance. Don't you think so?
Yeah. I think that if the campus were sensitive to where all of its students are coming from and figuring out how to make pathways so that they enter into their primary classes equally prepared, no matter what their background, it would be a different climate. And, I mean, I get angry when I hear the concept of affirmative action taken out of context of campus leaders, administrators, faculty, everyone who knows anything about it, and fought over by these businessmen. Those are corporate giants that sit on their border regions, by and large, you know, or butt kissers, brown nosers, you know, that's who sits there. They got elected, I mean, they got seated through those kind of political plumps, and they don't know what they're talking about, and that's a serious problem in itself. But let's pursue your question, Robert, as if they had some legitimacy. Another way to fix the problem that people are hiding under the mask of the phrase affirmative action would be to change the whole budget and just shoot those golden parachutes down and let that money go to students instead of a bunch of people who have proved that they're the epitome of the Peter Principle.
Mm-hmm. What is the reading that both you and you, Nick, have of the, or do you have any reading on the affirmative action debate in the low-income and homeless community? Do people tend to agree with Wilson? Do people tend to agree with you? Is there a third position they take? Or are they indifferent to the issue? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, at the risk of neutralizing the work I do in this community, I'll share my opinion, and that's that there are as many bigots among the homeless as there are among the housed. You know, and you will find a wide range of opinions. You know, I'm not the only person who's a dropout from college because I didn't have the resources it took to parent and take classes at the same time. You know, I've met my peers on the outside, as it were. So there's a lot of different opinions, but I think it's important that people see that the attack against homeless people and the attack against students of color and students with any kind of a different background is really the same attack, like what Jim was saying on your tape.
Okay, anything else you want to add?
Not at the moment. I'm interested in Nicholas's response to your same question.
So
why don't I hang up?
Okie doke.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Well, thank you.
And that was Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, a local Housing Now activist and community activist generally in Santa Cruz. We are discussing
affirmative action, the end of affirmative action at UC and its impact on low-income homeless people here in Santa Cruz. And our number here is 427-3772 or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. You are listening to 89.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Your voice, my voice, and the voice of all of us. Anybody who wants to call in, you get to talk. So if you want to respond to these concerns, if you want to voice an opinion we haven't heard yet, please give us a call, 427-3772. I'll be on until noon, and we are discussing poverty rights issues and issues of homelessness here in Santa Cruz. Yeah, Nick has pointed out we need some music here on the station to take a break from the interminable talking. That's a very good idea. Nick is going to search through the wreckage of the tapes here and cue up an appropriate tape. I am going to be talking, however, when we return, about curfews. You may recall last show on the curfew issue, there was a meeting of the Criminal Justice Council. The Criminal Justice Council recommended a model county curfew ordinance, which kind of took input from Santa Cruz, Watsonville, Capitola, and Scotts Valley, and came up with this uniform code for the county, I guess with an eye to establishing a county curfew and also rationalizing the curfews, making them all consistent in the different cities. There was an interesting article in the San Jose Mercury News on Sunday about the effects of the curfew in San Jose. It actually had some critics' comments, comments which were surprisingly absent, or perhaps unsurprisingly absent, from the Criminal Justice Council's meeting on Thursday night that I attended, in which they approved their curfew. And we'll have some of that after we give you a brief musical break. What are we listening to, Nick?
Talking Heads.
We're listening to Talking Heads. I'm glad Nick doesn't run the show usually. Is it here? There we go. You got a few seconds of Talking Heads. Listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We're back again, shoving them at you. This is your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse, and with me in the studio, Nutcracker Nick Whitehead. Nick and I co-founded an organization some years ago, which is still got a phone number and will still occasionally appear in literature, called SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. And we were interested in setting up a kind of a central place where people could come file a complaint against any police jurisdiction, whether it's the deputies, the Santa Cruz police, Watsonville, Capitola, University of California, private security guards, hosts, though there were no hosts back then, and simply get that complaint recorded somehow, so that in the future, if another organization were to look into it, whether it be the state attorney general, a grand jury, some other group, there would be a record for people to go back to. At that time, the city was discussing the possibility of a civilian police review board, which was in fact passed last year and has been in operation, or so they call it, for about, 8 or 9 months now, possibly a little longer. They've looked over about 15 or 20 complaints, or they have access to 15 or 20 complaints, essentially the complaints which were made to the police department rather than generally to the Civilian Police Review Board, though there are some exceptions there. And I wanted Nick, who's kind of the archivist and the man who's issued periodic reports for SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, to kind of give me his estimation of the Civilian Police Review Board as it's operating now, and also tell me what's been happening with SPAN. Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I started attending meetings of that Civilian Review Board early on, and let's just first note the makeup of it. Scott Kennedy appointed Michael Hernandez, who is a Hispanic small businessman. I think he runs a restaurant over the hill. So he's always a little bit tired when he comes to the meeting from his over-the-hill drive.
Over the hill, all right.
So not a typical Hispanic representative of people who might be abused by the police, unless they are SCPD charge over to San Jose to flay people in the streets. So I'm not aware of that. Then there's a lady called Trepanier, Noel Trepanier,